Translation. It is the nature of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that anyone who chants it immediately develops his loving ecstasy for Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's quite a long purport. So, I'll just read the first paragraph and just ask you to fire back at me perhaps the salient points or point that's, isn't it, in every paragraph something's said, and then we begin a new paragraph. So, purport. In this verse it is explained that one who chants the Hare Krishna mantra develops bhava, ecstasy, which is the point at which revelation begins. It is the preliminary stage in developing one's original love for God. Lord Krishna mentions this bhava stage in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 8. He knows that verse. He's not looking at the book. Huh? Very good. Do you also chant that together? Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. The translation to that verse. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Some of you know the translation as well. Yeah? This must be from the 30 most important slokas of Bhagavad Gita, perhaps, yeah? So you can say together if you know it. It's good. Start again, okay? I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. A neophyte disciple begins by hearing and chanting, associating with devotees, and practicing the regulative principles. And thus, he vanquishes all his unwanted bad habits. In this way, he develops attachment for Krishna and cannot forget Krishna even for a moment. Bhava is the almost successful stage of spiritual life. That was the first paragraph. So, any of you feel something that was a key point made in that? Rupi Velastro.
I'll probably summarize the entire process of devotional service from the Dalai Shraddha and that is how to up through all the different stages. Development stage of the process. We say that this is a natural progression for one who's chanting the holy name the right sort of way.
So that the whole span of it is there in that one paragraph from the beginning with the hearing and chanting, and then an Artanaviti, then rising to the stage of attachment or maybe asakti and the bhava. And what did it specifically say about at the stage of bhava where we almost, it seems such a way, isn't it? Almost. Almost that the Prabhupada says, successful stage of spiritual life. Bhava. Something else from there. Anything. Why was the verse cited? Why was the verse cited? Because of the bhava.
By chanting Hare Krishna on the
bhava. So, you know, there is such a thing as the bhava stage, isn't it? It's not somebody just made it up or it just came from nowhere. When a citation or reference is given to holy text, perhaps to clarify a point or to show it's based on something very substantial here. It's not just, I mean, in this sense you could say, it's not just mentioned, it's not just in the theological works of the Goswamis that they, you know, indulge themselves in this kind of aesthetic understanding of devotion. But right here, in the Gita, I mean, generally when people are giving citations in our tradition, they'll maybe first of all think, well, is there anything related to the Veda? You know, maybe there's some, it's like when we talk about Radha and Krishna, there's one verse from one part of the Veda that says that Krishna is resplendently brilliant when he's in the association of Radha. And Radha is extraordinarily beautiful in the association of Krishna. You don't separate them. And then from there, maybe something from the Upanishads, and then Puranas, and then other texts. As you build, it's a building of authority on the subject. It's not just whimsically speaking, it's building on authority. Authoritative texts. Everyone's agreed. No. Some people, if we say to some, we quote the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, this is the audience for Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. Oh, yeah, it's, yeah. For the broader beyond that, people of maybe perhaps South Asian background, then this, oh no, the Gita, we all accept that. We all accept that. Some people used to say, oh, the Gita is the Hindu Bible. And the Oxford Centre of Hindu Studies, I said, oh, wait, it's not the Bible of the Hindus. It's, and as a university, a lecturer said, in my first year, the Ramayana is perhaps it's important when you're a lecturer in university, the Ramayana is the most important text of the Hindus. And then quickly, when she was giving the class, she said, I know you might disagree with that, George. To me, going, I know you might disagree with that, George, but then turn to the rest of the class. And so, like that, there's very solid textual sources. So here, the stage of bhava, I mean, Bhagavat, sadharatir, bhakti anukramisyati. There it's mentioned in the Bhagavat, this progressive stages of bhakti. They are shraddha, ratir, bhakti. Faith, you know, shraddha. Rati there, the terms rati and bhava are synonymous terms. The writers of aesthetic theory of South Asia, they'll always, the terms rati and bhava are used synonymously. And Rupa Goswami also makes this point. Either Rupa Goswami or his commentators make this point that because when it's speaking about bhava in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it speaks of rati abhas, of pratibimba and chaya forms. Pratibimba rati abhas, chaya rati abhas. So it means bhava. The term is just used. It could mean bhava abhas, bhava pratibimba abhas, bhava chaya abhas. So the terms rati and bhava, they're synonymous. I'll go into that in a little bit in more detail. This, of course, these things. Abhas means sometimes you may feel, one day we're chanting, you know, we feel exceptionally not fired up. That's another thing, fired up. See, fired up chanting can look quite daunting to the irregular visitor to Bhaktivedanta Manor, isn't it? Like, I was chanting here the other day there in the japa period, which seems to be quite an infrequent occasion these days. But I was sitting chanting, a devotee next to me was sitting facing the curtain, chanting on a bead, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, with a curtain like there. And I just thought, we're still, you know, fired up like that as a movement, still like that. We may feel some emotion, some feeling, you know. So it's just chanting, you know, and all of a sudden I just felt quite emotional. It was a momentary thing. The other day there I was in Tesco, and I have this old sloka book, you know, where I just, from years ago, June 98, I started to fill in some verses, and so I got to the end of it, and I went to Tesco to get another little book, and I went to get one, I picked one up, and I thought, well, I don't need one that big now. And I felt like, because I was thinking, I'm not going to live that long. You know, I'll do some more verses, but I'm not going to live that long, and I'm not doing them at the same rate. So a small book will be sufficient. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's funny when you're a little older, then you think, I don't need so much of that now. I felt some, it's a pretty mundane example, but you feel that emotional moment. When you feel that emotional moment as a bhakta, when you're chanting, it's just, you know, somebody's maybe singing a really nice kirtan, and your mind just wanders in a kind of little golden thread of thought, maybe about yourself and this world and your aspiration for Krishna Bhakti, or maybe just something really beautiful, you know, maybe you're just, you know, in the Gaura Arti in Mayapur, and everyone's glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you're thinking of Vishnu Priya. He became so great, she was the one who could never associate with him again. And some feelings will come. It should. Even in the preliminary stages of Krishna consciousness, this is the abhas. Or as it said, Rati Abhas, Bhava Abhas. It's an Abhas form. It's not the thing in itself. If it was the thing in itself, we'd probably be throwing you out of the temple. He's lost it completely, altogether. No longer in control. Behaving as a unmada. He's a mad person. Mad person. Really, it's the symptoms of a categorically mad person. When bhava dawns in the heart of the practitioner, there, as more devotees in ISKCON attain the stage of bhava bhakti, our communications department will be working overtime. The PR trying to know. They're okay, they're fine. They're not insane people. They're, you know. It's a Rati Abhas, Bhava Abhas. It's a form of Pratyabimba and Chaya Abhas. Pratyabimba means like a reflection on water of a tree. And Chaya means like the shade of a tree. Those who are ardent seekers of mukti, bhukti and mukti, they want to enjoy this life, or they want to be free of this life. They're chanting Hare Krishna. Far more in life or to be free of this life. And I was visiting Shivaram Swami in the hospital. Radhanath Swami and Shivaram Maharaj sat together. Thought, now what would this conversation be? And the conversation in essence was, even the desire to be well. I used to see Radha Gokulananda. Actually, it was more, the conversation was, this material body is really a place of suffering. To be free of it, to be free of it, to be free of it. But that in itself is an obstacle to love. An obstacle to love. The aspiration for that. Because with the anyabhilasita sunnam, jnana karma dhyanavritam. With this aspiration, sunnam, desires for the world and desires to be free of it. This is jnana karmadi. Karmadi obviously reflects all the desires for it and more of it. And greater quantity. And the jnana, ultimately the objective of the jnana marga is the moksha, the liberation, to be free of it. The aspiration for it, or to be free of it, are obstacles in the path of love. Perhaps a graphic example could possibly be that if, say perhaps, a lady of marital age was doing some research on shadi.com. Not that I'm suggesting they do. And a very nice person from Uttar Pradesh came up. He's a graduate, etc., etc. Very interested in Krishna consciousness. Ati bhakti. Very interested in Krishna consciousness. Really serious. You know, I'm not a vegetarian now, but I think it'd be a great idea. The whole thing. Oh, it looks, all looks good. Everything looks fine. And then the marriage takes place. They come to the UK. They spend some time. They get a British passport. And then they go. I mean, would you want to marry such a person? Somebody who wants moksha from their situation. Somebody who's loving you or engaging with you because their interest is of some form of moksha. It's against love. What do you marry, you know? Or they marry you, you know, you marry a rich person. No. I know I should have done it, but she's working on it. to the aspiration to marry into wealth. Isn't it? They say that they have no friends, such people. As soon as you have some form of opulence, you have no friends anymore. It's finished. People don't, they become interested in your assets. They become interested in you, isn't it? Even to that temple, you'll see all the people in the queue, and then, oh, here's Mr. Such and Such. He's extremely wealthy. Hare Krishna, bro. Come on, come to the life membership lounge. You go in the queue, stand properly. Like that, isn't it? The queue's there. It's 3 hours waiting. So, what was I talking about? Yeah, the want for things. The want for things. If somebody wanted to have a relationship with you because of what they stood to benefit, either that they would gain something or be free of something, you'd say, I don't want to, forget it, I don't want to know you. I don't want to know you. There's no question. So what's the question of in loving Krishna? That we will harvest such a free me from my material body, free me, moksha. Therefore, Jiva Goswami writes, it's a brick wall against love. You know, material desires are something. They're there. Don't worry, you'll get over it. The desire for moksha is a brick wall against love. A brick wall against it. Therefore, they say that when, after explaining about devotion, such elaboration is given to show that devotion is free from the aspiration for bhakti and mukti. Material enjoyments and freedom from a material situation. So, this verse, that was a bit of a tangent, but this verse is being cited. Bhava, the word bhava is in the verse itself. That's even stronger. It's not something referring. Sometimes in the Bhagavad you read, or like one verse, Yat kriditam brajavadu dir idam cha Vishnu. Speaking about Krishna, but it's using the name Vishnu. It's just saying if you be sadanvita na shunu yadapi varna yadyaha. If we, with faith, hear and chant about Krishna, the verse says Vishnu. Remember, I used to read and I used to think, well, is it really Krishna or is it Vishnu? Are we using the verse and lending it, appropriating it for Krishna? But the verse refers to Vishnu. And then you come across another one that says, Krishna! Just like that. Krishna, you think. You quote that one. There's no doubt. No elaborations required. It's there. It's the, Mahaprabhu would call it the Mukhya Vidhi of the Shruti Pramanam. It's the, you know, no interpretations required. It's self-evident. The word bhava is here. Krishna say, I'm everything. Everything comes from me. And matva bhajanti. Understand, this is sambandha gyan. Knowing this, engaging in devotional service. This is the Buddha. It's not you become a very clever person in that sense. The Buddha here, the Buddhi, is the sambandha gyan. It means you're set within a matrix. It's, what did you say, the knowledge of the, it's kind of like a matrix of cognition. Is that be right to say that? A cognitive matrix. Where is it all existing? It's existing in our head. You could say that. I mean, I don't know exactly where it's existing, but in that sense, the sambandha gyan situates us in knowledge, which puts us exactly where we are in the universe and in relationship to Krishna. This is sambandha relation. It's all the relations. It's all sorted out in sambandha gyan. So we're literally initially placed on a stage, on a platform, which we wouldn't normally appreciate unless we receive it, we're informed about it. We're informed about it. So, this is the opening of the eyes. What's that verse? To the Guru. Agana timinandasya gyananjana shalak. My eyes are being opened up. They're being opened up by knowledge, which has set me in knowing the whole, you know, the whole who I am, etc., and in relation to Krishna. We need to be situated there so that we can progress. We can build on that. We can move forward. If that's not in place, if we're not situated in that matrix of cognition, then how will we progress? It's almost something that we need to be within in order to progress beyond where we're situated. Knowledge. Krishna glorifies, therefore glorifies knowledge. In the Gita, I think is it fifth chapter with all those verses on the glory of knowledge. And beyond all other, there are all these dravya yagya, tapo yagya, yoga yagya, tatapari. Beyond all other forms of yagya, the real thing is to become knowledgeable. To become sambandha gyan, to become knowledgeable. So, the Buddha, sambandha, proper, bhava, and then the bhava is a descending element. I'll explain that shortly. The bhava is a descent, it's the shakti of Krishna. It descends in the heart of the jiva. It's the shakti, sarup shakti of Krishna. So Buddha Bhava Samadhi, here it's here in the Bhagavad Gita, the citation's here. So here in this paragraph, Prabhuji mentioned about this, the progressive stages of Krishna consciousness. And Bhava, the almost successful stage in spiritual life. Almost successful. And keep an eye on the time because I want to read the rest. I'll just make another point on this. And I'll draw a point from this first paragraph. Just in the second half of the first sentence, which is the point at which Revelation begins. I mean, that's phenomenal. The point at which Revelation begins. Remind me to come back to that, okay? Preliminary and the point at which Revelation begins. I do want to come back to that. The almost successful stage. I'll come back to that as well. Important point, but I'll read the purport. You're probably thinking, shut up and read the purport. It can be a controversy at the temple sometimes. When I give a class, never finished the purport. You go away, you think you gave a great class, and you never finished the purport. Not fully programmed. Okay, so we'll go on to the second paragraph. Are you ready? A sincere student naturally receives the holy name from the spiritual master. And after being initiated, he follows the regulative principles given by the spiritual master. When the holy name is properly served in this way, automatically the spiritual nature of the holy name spreads. In other words, the devotee becomes qualified in offenselessly chanting the holy name. When one is completely fit to chant the holy name in this way, he is eligible to make disciples all over the world. And he actually becomes Jagat Guru. Then the entire world, under his influence, begins to chant the holy name of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Thus all the disciples of such a spiritual master increase in attachment for Krishna. And therefore, he sometimes cries, sometimes laughs, sometimes dances, and sometimes chants. There's a lot of information in this paragraph. These symptoms are very prominently manifest in the body of a pure devotee. Sometimes when our students of the Krishna Consciousness Movement chant and dance, even in India, people are astonished to see how these foreigners have learned to chant and dance in ecstatic fashion. As explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, actually this is not due to practice. For without extra endeavor, these symptoms become manifest in anyone who sincerely chants the Hare Krishna mantra. There was a lot in there, really. So perhaps you can serve to remind everyone of some of the salient points. Rupi Vlasper, if you want to start the thing going again, you're the most senior.
I was just thinking about the prayers of the Sansara prayers, where Prabhupada describes the symptomatic behavior of qualified spiritual master that he sometimes, feeling these ecstatic emotions, and by his influence, others are affected. And I was also thinking that there's a nice section of the Chaitanya Chaitanya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he says that by the association of a Madhyamayakari, one can develop Shraddha, faith, but by the association of Uttamayakari, one can experience systems of ecstasy just by being in their presence.
Mm-hmm.
The Prabhupada was talking about the influence of the pure Vaishnava, that just by his being in the state that he's situated in, that others will be transformed.
Yeah.
By that association.
Mm-hmm.
Presence.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. Excellent. This, isn't it? Prabhupada makes the point here. He almost speaks about the process again, but in another way. The anartha vritti progress, etc., etc. He speaks about the same thing again, but in a slightly different way. It's almost repetitive, but in a different, but focused on a different element of it. And the first thing was, the sincere student orally receives the holy name from the spiritual master. There it begins. It doesn't say here Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, or what, but obviously someone in the category of somebody with that level of gravity as a spiritual master. Then being initiated follows the principles given by the spiritual master. Isn't it? This is the Vaidhi Bhakti. It's based on the Ragahina Janavaji Shastra Gyai. There's no rag. There's no feeling. I mean, real feeling. Loving feeling. It's the Ragahina. It's not there. Jana Bhaji. So the person does the things, devotion, but there's no rag. There's no attachment to Krishna in that sense. Narad Muni doesn't think very highly of this type of devotion. I mean, he does, but he doesn't. In the Bhagavad, in this, I think it's the 7th canto, he says that, you know, there's so that gopis had feeling for Krishna, kama, desha, that, who was it was envious, Shishupal, and all these people, bhayat, fearful, kamsa. They, and the relatives, they had a fraternal feelings. He said they all had these feelings for Krishna. And he speaks of it, there's another devotion, he says. Which means the devotion absent of feelings, or Vaidhi Bhakti. And he says, better envy than Vaidhi. Is he pushing a point? He's pushing the point very substantial. Why better envy? Of course, the whole point's made. Don't practice envy. Don't practice just being so afraid of Krishna, you know, like Kamsa. He was completely Krishna conscious. Based on feeling, fear. The feeling. Isn't it? When you have feeling for something, it becomes an object of your contemplation. Isn't it? It's like, anyway, I won't give any graphic examples of that, but a slight example. You know, say you're in a kirtan, say there's one devotee, you always just feel in your head a bit envious of them. It does happen. You just feel a little bit envious of that person. A little bit, just, you know, whether it's not even reached the level of envy, but it's just, you know, they're a bit overwhelming. And so you come in fired up with the program, you come to the kirtan, you get in the kirtan, and that person's in the kirtan as well. Like right there, doing all the things that get really up your nose. Now you're here for kirtan to think of Krishna, to do all the stuff, and you can only think of one thing. Where is that person in the kirtan? Or, you know, should I stay? Should I go? Should I, you know, that thing that you have, whether it's a great, you know, if you have a great feeling, I mean, it can be either way. I remember one time I was playing Mardanga when I lived in Vrindavan in the kirtan. We'd be standing, you know, playing Mardanga, and the singer was here, it was the Maharaja was singing here, and the other Mardanga was on the other side, and we were really going at it, and then all of a sudden I got a thump in my back. Really, I got such a thump in my back, and all the way. When I turned around, it was somebody handing a beadbag to the Guru Maharaj. I was like, wow, they just, you know what I mean? At the expense of everything else, they're just knocking people off their feet to give Guru Maharaj's beadbag like that. I was the one who did it. I gave it to you. It was that moment in our lives that everybody forgot about except me. You got thumped. You know, so it can be that way. Where the feeling, it's where the head just goes. So the Ragahina, it's not there. Ragahina jana bhaje shastra agyai. But what is there? What Guru Maharaj said we should do, what the shastra said we should do. The prescriptions. Do this, do this, do this. And then don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. On you go. You're on your own. Yeah? Get on with it. This is the prescriptive devotion. He did it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. and the other things. It's your day for puja. Oh God, I'm doing the midday offering today. Totally forgot about that. Ah, have to get in good consciousness. So off with the TV and let's get ready. It's prescriptive. We get on with you to do it. I have to do it. I get on with it to perform my devotion that way. And so, Ragahina Janavaji Shastra Gai, Vaidhi Bhakti Bali Tari Sarva Shastra Gai. This is what all the Shastras say about Vaidhi Bhakti. It's being said, Kaviraj Goswami, I think he's probably the teachings to Sanatana or to Rupa, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining like that. The Vaidhi. The higher stages of that is prescriptive. But by the prescriptive adherence to it, the interesting point in here is that Prabhupada makes this point, actually, this is not due to practice. Some other classes, somebody will sit down and give a whole class about practice, isn't it? Everything's contextual, very much so, anyway. Whenever a devotee is speaking, we have to consider the context. Otherwise, if somebody sits down to give a class about practice, he's thinking, oh, I've got a great class. I've got a great question for him. We'll see how learned he is. Prabhupada said, it's not due to practice. So what? Our whole lives, mostly we're practicing devotees. It's not due to practice. What's Prabhupada meaning by this? When I read that line, I thought, it's not due to practice. Here we go. It's one of those conundrums. It's not due to practice. Now, one may give many different explanations of that. For instance, one may say, well, practice is one part of it, but the kripa is another. You know, that's very important. You can go so far with your practice, but if Krishna doesn't look upon you, if you don't mahantera, the kripa, there's no question of progress. Isn't it? And Chaitanya Charitamrita says that as well. Mahat kripa bina kona karma bhakti nai. No matter what you do, if you don't get the mahat kripa, you're going nowhere. Nowhere. It begins. Prema lati kara mula. Sorry, I just had to go through the whole song to get that line. The mula, the root. Sadhu sangha, as an anga of bhakti, is the root of the thing. Not only that, in this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says even in the stage of prema, it's a mukhya anga. It's a thing you do. It's the root. And it's a thing you do even in the most highest stages of Krishna consciousness. And in the absence of it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is quite frank. Mahatkripa, bina kona karma, no matter karma, whatever you do, you'll not attain the bhakti without Mahatkripa. So you can say it's not practice. That's often the thing. It's not. You can practice as much as you want. Specifically, Prabhupada makes the point here, or the focus here, is two things. Does he say it in this one? Anyway, it's either this paragraph or in this paragraph, the point is that sincerely, the two points made here is offenselessly. And sincerely. That's the point Prabhupada is drawing out here. He said not just by practice, but he concludes it in this point, that offenselessly and sincerely. Not just practice in itself. Prabhupada gives the example of the boat party going all night celebrating on the boat. All the devotees went in a big boat recently, wasn't it? Last year. They went in a huge big boat. You know that in ancient days what they used to do with people they considered to be mad? They just put them on boats. And they sailed around. They thought that they would sail towards their sanity. There was some mysterious thing in olden days. They never had a certain It's a whole big story. History of madness. But they didn't put them in, like, now it's a clinical thing. Well, you're mad clinically. You should stay here, sectioned. Then it wasn't like that. This is somebody who was really crazy or whatever. They put them on a boat, and the boatman would take some paisa, and he would go sailing around Europe in search of sanity. The devotees all in a big boat is another form of insanity. It's a divine form of it. The Unmada, Divyanmada, the divine mad people, isn't it? All the people going for a holiday, and all of a sudden they see all these people getting off the boat chanting and going, isn't it? I mean, the first time I went to Belgium with the devotees, I was on the boat with all the devotees and said, let's go for a hike, and I'm on the boat. And I was kind of shy. I was like, oh, no. On the boat. People are just with their families going to Europe and business people. He said, let's go for a hike. And we went. We were going through all the places in the boat, and all the people are like, they wave to us. We go, see, they all love us, man. They all like, they have a good, you know, they're humored by us. Whether they take us seriously, I don't know. But they're definitely humored by us. The boat. What was the thing about the boat? Sincerity? Yeah. Offensive. Oh, Prabhupada in the boat. The people on the boat, they sailed the whole night. They enjoyed the whole night. And when the sun rose in the horizon, they were still in the same place. Because they forgot to take the anchor out. Can you imagine if they did that in the big cruiser with all the devotees? We all paid for this. We were going the whole night, sleeping. It's a really comfortable ride tonight. Like that, you got up in the morning. Wait a minute, that looks like Portsmouth. Wow, France just looks like Portsmouth. This is the, isn't it? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it states, you can chant all you want. But if the sincerity and offenselessness isn't part of your character, you just keep sailing your boat nowhere. You will be one of those mad people on the boat. Because you'll be working. It's like, it's a really funny thing the other day. Somebody says, let's have a moment of silence for those people stuck in traffic going to the gym to cycle for 3 hours on a bike that doesn't go anywhere. I went to the gym for a period, and I thought, I could be cycling a bike. I'm sitting there in front of the mirror, you know, listening to whatever music they play. And I thought, I could be cycling a bike. And so I bought a bike on eBay. And then I sold it on eBay, like 2 weeks later, and cancelled my gym membership. But the thing is that the practices can go on forever unless in one's bearing, in one's being, we become offenseless and sincere. Now, this is the... I wanted to make another point, but I still have the rest of the purport to read. Should I just read the... What time is 9:15? Should finish, isn't it? 9 o'clock. Okay. So, here, the important matter... It's all important, but... The point that... Here's the process... You follow this process, become an offenseless chanter, bhava will manifest in the heart. By following the teachings of the prescriptions of authoritative texts and people who are... I use the word authority, you know, gently, in the sense that authoritative texts... I don't like to say authorities, because sometimes what becomes all important is a person's in a position of authority, regardless of what state their interior is. You know what I mean? You say the word, follow authority. I want to follow somebody who's a Mahajan. Following authority, I can follow the queen, follow with authority, authority, authority. I want to follow the footsteps of people who are moving progressively in Krishna consciousness. That's authority. Yeah? The substance of it. The word in itself, the power. Power and the word in itself mean nothing. It's the substance of the people. The substance of the person that will determine the direction I'm moving in progressively. I would hope so. So following that path, the prescription, offenselessly, because if one follows the guidance of a senior Vaishnava, it will become, by which bhava manifests, through which Krishna consciousness spreads, through which when people engage with it, they begin this progressive path and attain the same. This is the substance of the whole matter, isn't it? And therefore, in the association of such a person, Krishna consciousness spreads. The final paragraph. Many fools, not knowing the transcendental nature of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, sometimes impede our loud chanting of this mantra. Yet one who's actually advanced in fulfillment of chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra induces others to chant also. Now, obviously, this is a point. I think there's always been this amongst different Goswamis and Babajis and people. This real Sankirtanam is for us top. For them, Smaranam. And so we're kind of loud and they're kind of silent. And that, I think, is the thing about some people get, you know, our loud chanting. Of course, here you could say that that's the situation theologically. Politically, maybe amongst the sadhus in India. Here are people, I mean, loud chanting does get up people's noses, isn't it? Oh God, here they come. Just cross the road. Other people really love it. But devotees are humbly thinking, well, as Haridas Thakur taught, wasn't it? It's better because, no, I'm not just interested for myself. The sound vibration is good for everyone. Then Prabhupada makes the point. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, Krishna Shakti Bina Nahi Tara Pravartana. Unless one receives a special attorney from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot preach the glories of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. As devotees propagate the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the general population of the entire world gets the opportunity to understand the glories of the holy name. This is all about the sharing Krishna consciousness. While chanting and dancing or hearing the holy name of the Lord, one automatically remembers the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because there's no difference between the holy name and Krishna, the chanter is immediately linked to Krishna. Thus connected, a devotee develops his original attitude of service to the Lord. In this attitude of constantly serving Krishna, which is called bhava, he always thinks of Krishna in many different ways. One who has attained this bhava stage is no longer under the clutches of the illusory energy. When other spiritual ingredients such as trembling, perspiration, and tears are added to the bhava stage, the devotee gradually attains love for Krishna, prema. The holy name of Krishna is called the Maha Mantra. Other mantras mentioned in the Narada Pancharatra are known simply as mantras. But the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is called the Maha Mantra. Now, so many things are mentioned there about the empowerment of Krishna. The spread, it's turned to the propagation. We say that word, propagation of Krishna consciousness. The spreading, the sharing of Krishna. It's turned to the sharing. It's turned, because, you know, in the verse it says japa, isn't it? There's the concern. Japa, or japa, Rupa Goswami defines it as a silent murmur. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. You know, a silent murmur. The lips are moving. Isn't it? You know, in Gayatri, the more you move, the more it's compromised. You're chanting your Gayatri. You can stay awake. It's like that, isn't it, with Gayatri, the traditions of Gayatri mantras. It's almost like the more you move, the more it's compromised. is silent. It's an inner mantra. We don't say it out loud, isn't it? Although everybody, it's just like everybody says it nowadays. It's everywhere nowadays. And so japa is this murmur, kind of murmuring. It's contemplation. It's an activity of contemplation. You know, in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, or any bhakti, it's also stated that Muna Krishna Niveshayat. By any means, be absorbed in Krishna. That's bhakti. That's Vaidhi Bhakti. That's practice. That's all that stuff. The means through which I can be absorbed in Krishna. Japa, kirtan, this, that, so many things. It's contemplation. It's a meditation. It's a contemplation on the personality of Krishna and his loving affairs. Ultimately, therefore we recommend it. Chant the principal names of God. Is it Paramatma, Ishwar, this, etc., etc.? The secondary names. The primary names are all names related to this holy place and the holy people of Vrindavan. And the type of character that he exhibits in that place. Recite those names. Why? Because that's the object of our Kishore Krishna, whatever, is for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, their object of contemplation. So the recitation of mantras, purification from the recitation of mantras is a, as Prabhupada's used language, concomitant element of it. The object is contemplation. Because through the contemplation and association and all the other things attached to that, the very objective of all of the practices, bhava siddhya, is love, to love God, to feel it most substantially. So, but we do a lot of loud chanting. In fact, even in japa, some of us do a lot of loud chanting. And sometimes somebody has to say to them, isn't it? Can you, Prabhu, can you chant a little quieter? What? Can you, it's like the whole temple, you're sitting Hare Krishna, there's one person sitting there. They're like, don't need a megaphone. They're just in a certain bhav, and they're just, but you're trying to, you know those moments, isn't it? I think we've all had those days in japa, especially when you live in the ashram. You get up, it's the japa. You're not in the temple chanting your japa. The ashram directors, everybody will like, you're sleeping. You have to be in the company. You have to be in association. It's better even in the temple room or other approved places at the temple. I don't know what they are now. Prabhupada's room, is that approved? Hmm? Yes. Is that ladies or men? Separate in the same room. The ladies got the bathroom and the bedroom. And the men? Is that a priority space? Privileged space? Or is it all equal? Here, the ladies are this side. There's a invisible line here. You all look that way. And all the men look that way. No, they all look here. They all look here. Chant Hare Krishna. Isn't it? But some of these chanting very loud. Sankirtanam. It becomes, Sankirtanam means when it's louder. It's pronounced. And you know there's more of you. It's a communal act. A communal act of pronounced voice, which doesn't create, but within which divinity manifests, Krishna manifests in that sound. He's right, that we're surround sound. Isn't it? Krishna's there. He's there. Completely. That's the Yuga Dharma. Archana and all those things are there. But this is the thing. This is the real business of the Gaudiya Vaishnava people. So, but when devotees go out, they do. They chant loudly. The big kirtans here and other people come and they get really moved by it. So therefore Prabhupada's saying this thing. You know, some people criticize the loudness. I know the village of Lechmore Heath, they're extremely concerned about it. But, so, now here, To come back to the translation, 5 minutes left. To come back to the translation, it's just quite phenomenal that in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his presence, it just all happened so quickly for people. The verse, he's explaining to somebody who's a monist, you know, at that time they shunned emotion. Emotion is of this world. You got to rise above that. There's a... their whole thing was Tarka, their Navya Nyaya, the Navadip where Mahaprabhu grew up. They were committed to this, isn't it? So when Srivas heard them speaking the Bhagavatam a little bit in one of their lectures, he began to cry. He was feeling symptoms of bhava, hearing about Krishna. They threw him in the street. Get out, you emotionalist nonsense. It was scorned upon. Emotion. Really? That was not spiritual life. That was fantasy in your head. So, he's speaking to this Prakashananda in the seat, Varanasi, of this monists. No, is that the right term I'm using? Yeah, it is, isn't it? I get confusing myself. And Mahaprabhu was explaining his madness to this person. And so Krishna Nama Maha Mantrera Etasabha. Well, the nature of the name is Ye Jape. When chanted, Tara Krishna Upajaya Bhav. Upajaya Bhav. These, the holy name, of course, is Durahad Bhutabhirya Smin. Shraddha Durasti Panchaki. Even if one has meager faith, then the wonder of these five Pradhan Bhakti, Panch Pradhan Bhakti, these five, you only think, I'm not going to repeat them. These five main angas, of which the chanting is the foremost. Then, Svalpapi, Yatra Svalpapi Sambandha, by some mere association of these five huge angas of Bhakti, then, Saddiyam Bhava Janmani, Bhava Bhakti will come. Bhava Bhakti will manifest. In the Saddiyam. Saddiyam means the one with offenseless. Offenseless. Now hear of it in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life. This will be the concluding element here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Think about the manifestation of it in his life. You know, when he was young, obviously he's a young child, isn't he? He kind of was similar to Krishna and appreciated the chanting of people and like that. But he became an arrogant, intellectual, powerful, and charming young man. Not a devotee. Not exhibiting any of the behavior of a devotee. Rather, quite the opposite. But in that, there's such, you know, the male charm, profound beauty. Of course, we use the word handsome nowadays. Beauty doesn't kind of, but profound beauty, tremendous intellectual capability, and arrogance. That's a man. Isn't it? Really? I want to marry a man like that. Not a humble Hare Krishna. A domestic help. I want to marry a man. Excuse me. This is the male species in a profound way. And this is how he wandered around. And he'd see a Vaishnav and he would torment them. Explain the meaning of this word then. And he'd see a Brahmin, he'd flip him on his head in the Ganga by swimming under his legs. The Brahmin would stand there and do all his purificatory activities. And he'd fill his mouth with Ganga water and spit it on him. Then all the girls, he'd tell them, I want to marry you. They go like, he's too much. He's overbearing. It's just too much. He was God as a youth. And it was a very volatile youth for him as well. I mean, probably around the time of his teens.
It was extremely volatile. Isn't it? Remember that Leela? Something happened. You may remind me. He came home and he just smashed up the whole house. I mean, what one of you had a teenage child who smashed up your house? I mean, we all try to manage the teen period. My daughter's sitting there now thinking, that's it, I'm going to hit the bar on that one. But smashed up the whole house. And his mother had all the cereals hanging. You know, you don't have refrigerators. Everything's organized. Everything's managed. It's a year of management exists in the house of how the food is managed. It's not like, you know, weekly shopping. He took it. He broke everything. He began to beat the walls itself. And then he fell on the floor, unconscious, sweating. And his mother, Sachima, came, put a cloth in his head. Don't worry. It'll be all right. Oh, God. It'll be all right, son. Don't worry. It will pass. Sometimes in his youth he had these experiences, isn't it? Where he just became overwhelmed and people thought that he had epilepsy. They thought he had, they called it a disorder of air. And he would just be, and people were like, I mean, he was exhibiting anubhavas. But it wasn't connected to a devotional life. Then came the guru, Ishwarapuri. This is the point Prabhupada was making. Ishwarapuri came to Navadvip. This was a tremendous connection of Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri, and they just wandered into this place of Navadvip. Ishwara Puri came. He sat in the house of Advaita. Advaita said, "Oh, this very effulgent-looking sannyasi." And they didn't know who he was. He's a godbrother of he's Madhavendra Puri's. Ishwara Puri didn't know it was Ishwara Puri. And Mukunda started to sing the names of Krishna beautifully. He was on point, Mukunda. The aesthetic, the feeling that, you know, just got the hearts. A great kirtan singer. Just addressed the heart of people. And Ishwarapuri just fainted. Boom! And Advaita Acharya came over and he took Ishwarapuri's head in his lap. And then he thought, "Are you Ishwarapuri?" And he said, "Yeah." And then they all began to chant together, beautifully. And they were in a swoon. And this is how he came to Navadvip. And then he went for a walk and he saw this arrogant, charming, beautiful, fine figure of a man. And he said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "Nimai Pandit." He said, "Oh, you're Nimai Pandit. Oh, gosh." And Mima said to him, why don't you come to my home for dinner? My mother will cook something for you. And so Ishwarapuri said, "Okay, I'll come." So this was the guru, Prabhupada saying, the guru and the disciple coming together. And Sachima cooked for him and everything. And at a certain point, he was speaking Harikatha in the house. And Mahaprabhu noticed when he's speaking Harikatha, then he also became, these things were coming, he couldn't contain himself. The bhava was coming. Then he asked Mahaprabhu, "I've written a book, can you edit the book?" Now Mahaprabhu, it seems at this point, then he said, "How can I edit or correct the work of a Vaishnava? That's aparad. That's aparad. Better as it is. Even to correct is aparad." And no, Ishwar said, no, really, I need your help on this. Can you please?" I said, "Okay." All right, Mahaprabhu went through it. He saw, this is Atmanipad, this is another thing they say in Sanskrit. Parasmaipad. And he showed it to Ishwarapuri, and Ishwarapuri looked at it and said, "No, you're wrong." And he explained it, Mahaprabhu. It said Mahaprabhu felt the greatest joy in being corrected by a devotee. Greatest pleasure. Then from there on, Ishwarapuri left. Now what happened in Mahaprabhu's life? Where did this whole thing happen for him? As quick as this. Prabhupada says immediately develops bhava. Mahaprabhu left for his father's Shadhan, went to Gaya, isn't it? He took bath in the rivers, the holy rivers. He took bath in the holy kuns. But this time then, he had the association of somebody who was in at least the stage of prema, bhava, prema, whatever. And so from there, he bathed in his holy place, came to the holy place, and he walked into that temple, and he saw the whole scene, this fragrance of the flowers, the oils, the priests reciting mantras, that Shiva takes the great water of the Ganga on his head, that have bathed the feet of Vishnu. And as the, he just, that was it. In that moment, he just then manifested all of the anubhavas of prema or bhava in that moment. He wasn't practicing and sitting and kirtan with the Vaishnav, the devotees. He had had the company of one and he walked into a temple. And it happened in that moment. And as he looked up, who did he see? Ishwarapuri was right there. And then they just began to spend time, and Ishwarapuri came to him. He said, I've only cooked enough. I'll cook again for myself. Mahaprabhu was saying, I'll cook again for myself. He served his guru. He then, like this. From there, he was, wasn't it said he was headed for Vrindavan, but then he turned and came back to Puri. Now the practicing devotional community there, it's almost complete. The practicing devotional community there were, they heard he'd come back. A few of them came together. Sriman Pandit and Murari and Sadashiva and some others. And they're saying, how was the travel? Nice, you're back. Anyway. And he was like, yeah, it was quite substantial. Now, can you imagine? He has this eruption within himself of such divine emotions for Krishna. It said he began to feel the vipralamba, viraha. This mood came over him already. And so when he came back, he began to say, well, I went to the temple and I had this. And he just began to cry. He began to just exhibit like horripilations. And everyone's like, whoa. What happened to Nimai? Is this what's happening? And then he just said to the few Vaishnavs, he said, can we meet tomorrow? I want to explain to you the tremendous sorrow within my heart. And perhaps we can meet at Shuklambar's house. You can imagine in Navadvip, the next morning they were all in Srivas Thakur's garden picking flowers for their puja. And they're saying, Nimai's back. You know, he's talking all about Krishna and he's exhibiting all these anubhavas. It's extraordinary. They're like, what? Nimai? He's taking the flowers. Yeah, Nimai. He wants to meet with us. And then Gadadhar comes to the place. He's like, what? Nimai? And they're like, yeah, we've been invited to Shuklambar's house. We're all going to go there. And he wants to explain to us the sorrow that's within his heart. And they all go, wow, that's it. So then, of course, Gadadhar hadn't been invited. And so he thought, I'm not missing this for anything. So they all went to Shukambar's house and they gathered there and Gadadhar hid behind something. He hid his presence there. And Nimai came in and he was saying, no, I tell you, you know, you Vaishnava, what happened to me there? And he began to just say what happened. As he began to say what happened, he just became overwhelmed with prema and he's just this whole sense of missing Krishna so much. I can't exist without Krishna. And he began to cry, a revelation. He fell into a swoon. Not only that, this was Mahaprabhu's transportation of all these devotees to another realm of existence. They all fell into a swoon of Krishna consciousness and ecstatic emotion. And as they were recovering from that, Gadadhar, who was hiding, fell over in a swoon and knocked something over, and Mahaprabhu said, what was that? And then Gadadhar came out, and when Mahaprabhu saw Gadadhar, he said, since such a young age, you've been experiencing these things. You've known these things. How exalted are you? And then they had kirtan. This is, I think, when he explained, he spoke about the Harinama verse, and it's recorded like that. So I was thinking, you know, the immediacy of this transformation in the life of Chaitanya, who was the Krishna in the exhibiting, or in the life of a devotee, in the role of a devotee, phenomenal. And I guess that in coming to terms, because it happened to so many people, who he embraced, who he saw, I mean, obviously it was a phenomenal presence amongst people. And the others were just as mad and surcharged with it. But in moments, people were just hitting the highest level. Now, great association, it's considered like that. Bhava Bhakti can come. Sadhana Binivesaja, Sri Krishna Tad Bhakta Prasadaja. If someone's never done a day of sadhana in their life and has no other record of it, by the association of a devotee who has such attributes, or by the direct mercy of Krishna himself, then one can attain Bhava Bhakti in a moment. So that's obviously there. For others, for us, you know, getting to the point of this sincerity and freedom from offenses, I don't think it's so far around the corner. Really. But it just takes such a long time. It just takes such a long... I mean, not really, but yes, really. And therefore, with this verse and this purport, I think the essential message here is, yes, of course, you don't have to worry for everything else. Just chanting Krishna's names in contemplation of Krishna, the very sadhya will be the very fruit of it, whatever you want to call it, the mukhya phal of it all, will be with you quicker than any other way. Any other way. Now, remember, he's talking to Prakashananda. But Prabhupada's making the point in all of it that, you know, in the association and following the teachings which bring about this sincerity of heart and offenseless character, and as such, moments, it's only moments away. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.